Well, hello, lovers of mysteries and lovers of horses. Welcome to the podcast that combines both of your interests into one tidy package. Yes, it's Horse Mysteries. We're here again. My name is David Dedrick.
My name's Lisa Williamson.
And this week, we were promised a medical mystery, but I've heard, well, I'm just joking, it is a medical mystery. I was going to pretend that there's not a medical mystery, but I don't even know why I would do that. So it's a medical mystery this week, right, dear?
You're right.
And I believe that it was called, what's the word? Not catching, but contagious. Is that right?
No.
It's not called contagious? Dang it. I guess I was thinking of the Prince song. I don't think there's a Prince song called contagious. I think the word is going viral.
You are way off base.
Way off base? What is it called, dear?
No foot, no horse.
Oh my God, I forget that.
I don't know.
Because that is like a farrier's mantra. And just so people know, there's people out there who listen to the show who think I'm an ignoramus, which is true. But actually, I was a farrier, so I do have some knowledge of horses from the knee down. Everything above that is a mystery to me, but from the knee down, I am an expert. Well, not an expert, but I'm knowledgeable.
You're educated.
I'm educated. That's different than being an expert, by the way. If you're educated enough, you know that no one can be an expert. So, no foot, no horse. The saying goes, of course, that, you know, a horse has to stand on its hooves. And if those hooves don't work very well, for whatever reason, maybe laminitis or navicular or one of those sort of foot-related diseases, then you have no horse, because that's pretty much the only way they get around. You can't ride a horse in a wheelchair, the horse being in a wheelchair. You mm-hmm. can maybe put a wheelchair on the back of a horse, sit in the wheelchair and ride the horse that way. That's a possibility, but you could not ride a horse that's, the horse has to be in a wheelchair.
True.
Is what I'm saying. Mostly because horses can't get into wheelchairs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know why?
No.
Me neither. All right, dear. So let's. This is episode 4, right?
Yes.
Which is traditionally a medical mystery?
Yes.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't notice a pattern, but thanks for that.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. So the time is spring of the year 2000.
2000. Mm-hmm. So, all right. Well, a year that everyone felt relieved about. Because the previous year, everyone was in a big panic.
Oh, because Y2K.
The big Y2K grift that was mm-hmm. happening that got people's knickers in a twist. Once that passed into the year 2000, although, strictly speaking, it wasn't the next millennium until 2001. I know no one wants to hear that, but that's a fact. But anyway, so people were very excited. It's the year 2000. I think someone did a song about it. Anyway, so what happened that year?
Well,
we were pretty new parents.
Yeah, we were.
We were just like a total state of exhaustion at all times.
Yeah, yeah. We would have had a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Just barely 3.
Yeah.
That is true. So the where that this story starts is Saskatchewan, Canada.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
The keystone of Canada.
That is true. Yep. So
The Keystone Province, as it's called.
Yeah. As year 2000 approached, two Canadian Connemara pony enthusiasts, so commercial breeder Jocelyn Garneau-Davies of Devon Ridge Farms in Spruce Grove, Alberta, and established private breeder Penny Huggins of Rills Connemaras in Saskatchewan, both imported new Connemara pony breeding stock into Canada.
Oh.
So the importations of the 7 ponies by the two breeders were made independently of each other, with the goal of each farm being to introduce new breeding lines into Canada to prevent any more inbreeding within the country's very small Connemara gene pool.
Uh-huh. Good intentions.
Mm-hmm. So in total, the two women brought in 3 mares from the USA, 1 stallion from the UK, and 1 stallion and 2 mares from Ireland.
Hmm.
So since the 1964...
So can we just pause for one second?
Sure.
In case if this is going to be answered later, let me know. But mm-hmm. Is there a problem with having like a limited breeding stock? Like in Canada, let's say we have, you know, is that a problem?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It makes a very small gene pool.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so problems that can crop up will then be repeated, duplicated down the line.
Yeah.
All right.
So you can enhance positive qualities, but you can also.
All right. So everything went fine. End of story.
Not quite.
Okay, so obviously there's also can be negatives to bringing mm-hmm. in outside breeding stock into a line as well.
Yeah, yeah. Not bringing outside breeding stock in, but if you keep a limited gene pool, then if you have like negative things, they can just be exacerbated.
Okay.
But
I see. So you have a limited gene pool, so you have a
So you're
you have a pretty typical DNA spread along between all the horses in this particular breed we're talking mm-hmm. about.
Yeah.
So let's say there's like some kind of trait, inherited mm-hmm. trait that a lot of them share. So this trait, which might be neutral in most conditions, could be exacerbated by the introduction of something that triggers this gene in some way? Is that what you're saying?
No, not at all.
Well, I'm all mixed up.
No, you want the introduction of, a larger gene pool.
Yeah.
Because that a large gene pool is a strong gene pool,
okay.
generally speaking.
Okay.
Typically.
All right. Well, let's go on with the story because obviously there's a twist.
There is a twist. So, yeah, since the 1964 closing of the Connemara breed stud book in Ireland, inbreeding has been an ongoing and increasing concern.
We got to stop for a second here, because what does that mean? The
closing of the stud book.
Was it a giant tome located in a building and they just like closed it with a giant boom as if it was in a bank vault?
Yeah, kind of. Hmm. For instance, I grew up with thoroughbreds.
Yes.
And with thoroughbreds, and I thought every breed was this way. with thoroughbreds, the thoroughbred mom mates with the thoroughbred dad and they produce a thoroughbred
they have
baby.
Dinner together.
And yeah. And so that's been going on for 300 years. It's the only horses you will find in any thoroughbred horse's pedigree will be a thoroughbred going back 300 years or more now.
That's pretty amazing.
It is. And they've kept track of that. And I can go on to my horse's pedigree.com.
Yeah.
And just keep clicking like five generations back, and end up in the 1700s. And they're still all thoroughbreds.
Yeah. All the way back, right back to Godolphin.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And so, amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing that it's kept track of like that.
Mm-hmm.
But also, so obviously if someone, like some unscrupulous character puts a little bit of, let's say, Appaloosa into a thoroughbred, then that thoroughbred isn't a thoroughbred anymore. It's outside of the, it wouldn't get
registered. Yeah. Mm.
And that's sort of the same, but so that's different than say warmbloods. Warmbloods, you can have any kind of.
Depends on what kind of warmblood. Turkaners are the same as thoroughbreds, and that Turkaner mom and dad came from Turkaner grandparents, came from Turkaner great grandparents and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
But I know I had a horse that I was riding and he was sold to the lady as a Selfrancais. And then we got his papers and his mom was a thoroughbred. And then in his dad's side, there was Selfrancais, there was Oldenburg, there was thoroughbred, there was Hanoverian. So they're just a mix. And there's breeds and there's registries. And so thoroughbred is a breed.
I see.
And then some horses, some kinds of warmbloods are actually just a registry. If you meet a particular physical type, then you can be registered as that kind. Yeah.
Like I know with Frisians that their registry is based on their behavior, based on their, so if they are up, if they're too wild, if they're too much of a handful, they will not be registered as a Frisian because then it's considered to be too dangerous a horse to have as a large.
So they can be excluded from the gene pool.
That's right.
They still, and Connemaras are the same. So there's a Connemara registry. We'll read about it a little bit more here. But if they don't meet particular physical criteria, then they're excluded from the registry.
Yeah.
And then likewise, the thing that you were talking about, the closing of the stud book.
Yeah. So well, you were talking about it.
Yeah.
I just questioned it.
Yeah, you questioned it. The Connemara as a breed has only been around for about 100 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so they picked a number of stallions, 5 stallions way back when. We'll go into it more deeply later.
Yeah.
But then going forward from there, they decided to introduce some greater height and more energy at one point. And so they allowed 3 thoroughbred stallions to be bred into the lineage.
Yeah.
And then about a year or 10 years later, they wanted a little bit more substance, so bigger horses. So they allowed 3 Irish draft horses to be bred into the lineage.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then in the 1960s, they allowed 1 Arabian to be bred into the lineage so that, they had a little bit maybe more fanciness, refinement. And then after
cuter
that
faces.
One horse.
They wanted cute faces.
Yeah. After that one horse, that's when the stud book closed. So the stud book has been closed since 1964. They haven't allowed any outside influences.
Oh, I see. Yeah. That's what that means. So, yeah. So it just cuts out any kind of non-Connemara.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's fascinating.
Yeah. So I didn't know that was a thing, but
now
I can look back in our pony's pedigree because
we have a Connemara.
We have a registered Connemara.
Full disclosure: this story all comes out of a huge bias towards Connemaras.
yeah, we are biased towards Connemaras for sure. Our pony, our perfect pony. Yeah, I can look back in his pedigree, and he's got a number of thoroughbreds in his lineage. He's got a couple of the Irish draft in his lineage, okay. But not in the first five generations.
Sure.
So actually, once the thoroughbred appears in the first.
But he's a pretty stocky character.
He is, yeah.
So he must have a little bit of that somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah.
That's showed up in some way. Because what's interesting about him, well, but interesting about his family is how different all of the brothers and sisters are from each other. They don't really look
yes,
like each
no,
other.
Yes, no, not at all. Not at all. And even his mom. I was expecting his mom to be so much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she's tiny.
She's a tiny little thing. Yeah. And he was the first foal. And often the first foal is small.
Yeah.
But he is very substantial. And certainly...
Particularly substantial in the winter when he has his fur coat.
yeah, but he's probably almost a hand bigger than his mom. And then, and his dad wasn't particularly big. He's almost the twin of his father. In fact, his grandfather.
Is the grandfather Rory, you mean?
Rory, on his mom's side. Yeah, his grandfather's owner saw him at a show and actually thought that, our pony was her stallion.
Okay.
Yeah. Huh. So, and she just, completely thought it was her stallion. She's like, what is he doing here? Anyway, back to our story.
Yeah.
I hope
that was an interesting detour for me anyway. I hope people have appreciated
that. Yeah. So, the biggest thing with, the closing of the stud book in Ireland in 1964 is that inbreeding has been an ongoing and increasing concern for Connemara owners, partly as a result of limited genetic diversity and partly as a result of a worldwide Connemara numbers being so low that the EU has now made EU law the Connemara is now considered an endangered breed.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
even in Ireland.
Well, in Ireland, the Connemara holds rare breed status.
Really?
Yes.
That's really weird.
It is very weird, but
it's really like I know. Obviously, we're biased, and let me just say right out, Harris is a big giant brat. This is a fact.
He's got personality.
He's got personality, but he is such a talented horse,
mm-hmm.
and such a great. What's the word?
He's a great ambassador for the Connemara breed, I gotta say.
He's a great ambassador. I guess maybe that's it. Maybe they're not all like Harris. That's maybe we're just lucky because, I mean, he was a brat, like when he was little and would not stop moving his head when you're trying to put on his
bridle.
His bridle when he was, when our youngest was trying to put the bridle on and he was just bobbing his head like he was listening to dance music. That's frustrating or whatever, but in terms of ability and overall character and how kind he is as a mm-hmm. horse besides biting us, but I think biting is it's a love bite from mm-hmm. from Harris, but I think this is amazing to me that it's not a more popular breed, like, don't you think? Like, this is weird.
Yes.
And maybe ponies are out.
They are, yeah, certainly we see more or fewer ponies. We see that in Pony Club.
Yeah.
Like the numbers of ponies available for things were traditionally pony-based sports, like Prince Philip Games, for instance.
Sure.
Way harder to get ponies.
Yeah.
Which is sad, but unfortunately, kids grow out of ponies. And so, as breeders, often have a harder time selling ponies. Someone can have a horse and keep it for years and years, but a pony, typically, you're going to have a limited time with that pony, which is a sad thing.
I guess it's true, but a good pony is forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are maybe outside of that, Everyone wants a big horse now.
Sure,
You get 11-year-olds that want the 16-hand horse, and then our 12-year-old, we bought a 14-hand pony, and she was still riding him when she was in university, and now I'm riding him, so.
Yeah, I guess everyone wants a 16-hand horse until they're up on top of a 16-hand mm-hmm. horse. then they realize that maybe that's not such a great idea, because it is kind of scary up on a big horse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you're not used to it. I mean, eventually you get used to it, I guess, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's harder to me, it's harder to be daring. And, you know, it's harder to put yourself out there when you're on something that's, you're just going to hurt yourself just from falling off of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, let alone like anything else that could happen.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay.
Anyways.
Enough of this advertisement for ponies.
Okay. So.
Brought to you by the Pony Lovers.
Connemara Pony Lovers of Canada. So, yeah, just another example of how small the pool is that they're drawing from. So, in 2011, a total of 4,068 Connemaras were born worldwide. And of those, only 963 were born outside of Ireland.
Hmm.
So,
it is a small.
Yeah. Compare that, for instance, to warm blood foals born in Germany. So, average number of warm blood foals being born in Germany through the 1990s was 39,000 annually, just in one country.
Wow.
Compared to 4,000 Connemaras in the whole world.
Yeah. But I mean, 38,000 of those horses were shipped to the United States.
Yeah. Okay. And then another comparison, quarter horses registered in the year 2023 in the USA, 70,000. So 70,000 quarter horses born annually in one country alone, compared to 4,000 Connemara ponies born
worldwide, basically.
Worldwide, yeah.
Huh. And
less than 1,000 born outside of Ireland.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah. Yes. No, I had no idea that the numbers were that small. But actually, Harris's registration number, he's Canadian registration number 56.
This is nutty. I just, you know, you don't really think about it, but I guess it's true. Like, you don't really see, like, not let alone Connemaras, but Welsh or any other kind of small breed ponies. You don't really see very many of them around.
And apparently Shetland ponies are now endangered. So there's another.
Well, they're standing on the road. You go to Shetland, they're just all over the place. Like, no wonder they're endangered. Like, get off the road, ding-dongs.
Yeah, that is true. Okay, carrying on with our story.
It's the first place I've ever been to where, like, there's, like, wild, you know, like, we're used to, like, wild animals, like possums. Like, you know.
And deer.
And sometimes deer out on the roads. But you go to a place and there's, like, actual ponies, like, hanging around on the road. It's kind of shocking.
Mm-hmm. It is, yeah.
But also, get off the road. You're endangered.
Okay, so, anyways.
Also, just before we go on.
Okay.
Shetland is a very, very dangerous place. There is a lot of murders in Shetland.
Based on the TV show?
Based on the TV show, there's one every day.
Yeah, pretty much. For a small population.
There are no natural deaths in Shetland, as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so back to our story. So both Davies and Huggins were understandably keen to see the outcome of the introduction of their new bloodlines into their respective herds. However, here we go.
All right.
In the year 2000, the breeding season at Rills Connemara had a rough start when the foal out of one of the new Irish bred mares, who had been imported via the U.S., was born with what was described as weird feet.
Okay.
So this mare had been mated to Huggins' newly imported U.K. stallion. When a number of other foals by the same stallion, but out of different local mares, also developed the weird hoof issues within a few months of birth, these mares had never produced foals that had had issues with their feet, or anything else for that matter, in the past. Hmm. Because the Connemara breed is renowned for its great feet, and in fact good feet are one of the tenets of the breed standard, this foot problem was a real anomaly. So Huggins worked closely with her vet and farrier to help improve the condition of the afflicted livestock's feet, but it was to no avail. Subsequent breedings with similar outcomes made Huggins suspect a genetic issue with her new stallion, who outwardly showed no sign of any foot issues himself.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. However, in 2003, in an abundance of caution, Huggins had the stallion gelded. So, now without a stallion, in 2004, Huggins then sent one of her imported broodmares to Devon Ridge Connemaras in Alberta for a mating with their new stallion, recently imported from Ireland. Sadly, 2005 saw a repeat of the scenario when this latest foal by this new outside stallion also had the same hoof issue. Then later that same year, Devon Ridge Connemaras had two of their own foals by the same new stallion, born with similar hoof problems. So neither of the breeders had ever personally seen or experienced a similar condition in their own breeding stock, nor had they heard of any similar condition through their extensive network of Connemara contacts across North America. So while the affected foals typically appeared normal at birth, within a few months their hoof walls began to deteriorate. The weird hooves were alternately described as the ponies having feet like, and this is a quote, coconut matting, end quote.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or having hoof walls like paintbrushes. So these, these individuals.
So almost like the lamina is, like, it's almost like the lamina is like exposed.
Yeah.
That's what it makes me think of.
Like, I think at the bottom, they turned into like a little broom or something like that.
Well, yeah. But like, when you think about horses that have had laminitis, mm-hmm. and when you trim their feet or when you see their feet trimmed, they have those. You can see the striations of the lamina. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's what it almost sounds like, right?
You are right. Yep, okay. Yep. So, yeah, these individuals then became described as having soft foot.
Mm-hmm.
So the horse, and by extension pony, and its relatives a donkey and zebra, are a diverse group of mammals that have evolved over millions of years from a five-toed mammal into an odd-toed ungulate. So today, the horse bears its entire weight on its third or central toe, with a primary structural support coming from the fingernail equivalent, known as the hoof wall, which has become fully interdigitated with the underlying soft tissues by means of a network of interlocking leaves in a structure called the sensitive laminae. Yeah, which in turn encradles the coffin or pedal bone, which is the base of the bony column that provides the structural support of the animal's entire frame.
All right, so let's just break this down a little bit more. So basically, when you think about a horse's leg, from the knee down, it's like your finger from your knuckle to your fingernail.
Yeah.
So that's basically a horse's lower leg from the knee down.
Yeah. And so all skin and bones, no muscles.
All skin and bones, yeah. Just tendons.
Tendons, ligaments, skin, bones.
And when you get to our fingernail, what a horse has done is through evolution is it's grown its fingernail as a protective case around its lowest. That's
the lower part of the digit.
Lowest part of the bone. So it protects the bone with this encasement of what would be called the insensitive part of the horse's hoof, like the outside of it.
Keratinized tissue.
Yeah. And so it's like your fingernail. It doesn't feel anything in that part. Like that's why you can trim a horse's foot.
Or you can cut your own fingernails.
Like the way you can cut your own fingernails or cut your hair. It's not, it's part of us. It's growing from us, but it doesn't have a nervous system in it. Obviously it's ideal for a flight animal to have these, streamlined fingers that have no weight really to them in terms of like muscle mass or any kind of fat or anything. They're just absolutely just
fast moving limbs that can go twice as fast as the body.
Yeah. And so you have to imagine around that fingernail, what's called the pedal bone or the coffin bone. It's kind of shaped like a horse's foot, basically. Mm-hmm. It has a similar shape to the hoof. And it's held by these interlocking, we call them leaves. But yes, basically
it's almost like a sock that's around it. Yeah,
but it's a sock made of millions of branches that are all interlocking with each other. And that's what supports all the horse's weight onto the foot. I mean, there's other parts of it. There's the frog and things that are working as part of it. But almost all of that weight is being held in place by this weird
sling thing that's kind of velcroed to the hoof wall itself. And supports the bone inside the foot.
Yeah. So pretty amazing.
Yeah.
It's an amazing mechanism. But at the same time, just like humans.
One thing goes wrong.
I mean, it's just like us. When you think of the knee as it's a pretty simple joint. It's just a hinge. But because of our weight resting on this hinge, it causes all kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. So what is a simple evolutionary thing, just a hinge joint, it's a network of, kind of like the horse's knee, it's a network of tendons supporting all this mass, And it's just unfortunate that,
Everything goes right. It's a beauty in its simplicity, but one thing goes wrong and oh my God, watch out.
It all comes apart because it's simple, but it's also complicated. Mm-hmm. It's weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, go on, dear. Sorry. I just wanted to
make it more explicit. Yeah. very good. So, yeah, the structural integrity of the hoof is paramount to the horse's well-being since, as you just said, the hoof capsule bears the entire weight of the horse. So, for people that don't know, average weight of the average horse is about 1,000 pounds, and a pony is about 880 pounds. So, the forces on each hoof when the animal is just standing still is about 220 to 250 pounds of force on each limb.
Yeah.
So that converts to 78 pounds of pressure per square inch. But these forces increase with speed and activity. So, for instance, a horse racing at top speed over a jump can have applied forces in excess of 6,000 pounds placed on each foot. And then if you add things like horseshoe modifications or footing differences, the harder the footing, the more the pressure will increase.
Wow.
Yep. So in these young Connemaras that were affected by the weird hoof issue, the hoof wall at its point of origin, which is a coronet band, appeared normal. So the hoof wall originates at the coronet band, which is similar to the human cuticle, and grows straight down along the remainder of the limb. So, as you said earlier, interlocked with the underlying sensitive laminae tissues until the limb terminates, and then the hoof wall extends independent of the digit, similar to the fingernail in the human. So in the case of the horse's hoof, the point of termination is when the horse is motionless in contact with the ground, as the horse is essentially standing on its fingernails.
Yeah.
So in the individuals that were affected by the weird hoof issue, though, at the bearing surface where the foot meets the ground, within a few months of birth, the hoof material would crack and chip and then ultimately start to disintegrate.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. So the insensitive part of the hoof wall, which is also also basically a lamina as well. Yeah. It's an insensitive
lamina, yeah.
It just disappeared and leaving the sensitive exposed. Oh, yeah. That must have been very painful for the horses.
So, yeah, while the ponies for the most part appeared sound at the walk, the condition of the foot became so compromised that regular movement and exercise obviously needed to be curtailed to preserve the integrity of the remaining hoof wall and ultimately the serviceable soundness of the pony.
Gosh.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
It is, yeah. So over time, it soon became apparent that in spite of all the therapies tried, the condition was progressive and not reversible. The ponies were left standing on their soles. So structurally, this was not a sustainable situation. Any horse or pony in this situation would end up with laminitis, a chronic, painful, debilitating foot condition that ultimately could result in humane euthanasia.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be like crushing the laminae.
So just so people know what laminitis is, it's also called founder because for some reason ship metaphors are a big part of horses. But anyway, the bone, the pedal bone or coffin bone, actually separates from the lamina and starts to sink. So that's what the foundering is. It's sinking down and so that it rests right onto the sole of the horse's foot, causing a lot of pain.
Yeah, because the laminae underneath is getting crushed.
Yeah, yeah.
And the laminae is the major source of nerve supply.
Nerve supply and also blood supply to the horse's foot.
Yeah, it's cutting off the blood supply, but it's also, squishing all the nerves. Yeah. Extremely painful.
Yeah, it sounds terrible. My gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okie doke. So, early theories.
Just here to keep it.
Yeah.
Keep it for the people like me, the common folk.
So early theories. So initial investigations into the hoof defects were centered around possible environmental or nutritional factors. Although Devon Ridge Farm and Real Connemaras were in different Canadian provinces, they were both located in the prairie region, which had a similar habitat and climate. So in spite of the two breeders expending much time and money in consultation with local experts in an effort to find the cause of the hoof defects, no nutritional or environmental causal relationship could be established. Likewise, no known disease processes could be identified. So while the investigation into the cause was ongoing, farriers and veterinarians were treating the affected foals for both white line disease or onychomycosis and thrush, which is a mixed bacterial fungal infection.
Both of them are. fungal infection. Yeah.
So with the coming of 2005 and the birth of the affected foals by the new stallion at Devon Ridge, at this time, a genetic cause for the condition was considered. So a quick calculation determined that from the initial crop at Rills Connemaras, all the foals affected by the weird hooves were the offspring of the newly imported UK stallion. While on the maternal side, the foals were out of both a newly imported mare as well as several resident Canadian mares who originally came from U.S. bloodlines. It had to be noted that these established broodmares had never had any issues with their foals in the past. So Huggins and Davies looked at the ponies' pedigrees, which was difficult as there were no online pedigree databases available at that time. But they could go back only as far as four generations and were able to determine that none of these ponies appeared to be closely related in any way other than through the two sires who were common to the two groups of foals. So after this dive into the horses' pedigrees, Huggins and Garneau came to the supposition that the two new stallions, one by now who had been gelded, had to be carriers of a gene that caused these weird hoof issues, and that some of their mares also carried the gene, which must be recessive. Unfortunately, there was no test available to prove their theory.
Yeah, there's no 23andMe for horses.
For ponies, yeah. Okay, 23 hands in me. No, 14 hands in me. Okay, so we'll read a little bit more now here about the Connemara breed, which we talked about a bit previously. But anyways.
Can I just say that white line disease and onychomycosis are two of the worst things to deal with as a farrier because it is so awful.
Yeah.
They're just so awful to the wall of the... Because what happens is it's the white line disease, but also onychomycosis, both appear the same way, which is that the white line or the border between the sensitive and insensitive laminae is consumed by this bacterial infection or a fungal infection. And so it's just like an endless battle that you'll never win, it feels like. And you're just constantly like carving away huge chunks of hoof wall.
And it looks terrible.
To try and expose, because you know, obviously this fungus thrives in anaerobic or, you know, low oxygen situations. And so you try to expose it to the oxygen and you're just like carving away. And of course, it's easy to carve away because the walls are separated because this fungus has grown up between them. And it's just, oh, it's so awful. Mm-hmm. It's endless.
Endless.
And they feel like you'll never find a solution for it.
Yeah, it takes years.
Yeah, it does. And of course, the whole time the client is just like, this looks terrible. You're like, I know. There's no other way to deal with it. Like, this is no... Unlike with humans, fungal infections under their toenails. There is medicine for that. Like you can go to your doctor and
And they're not having to bear their weight on that, and that's the other thing too.
But you know, because horses are huge creatures and there's just not that much money in it, not that much money invested in research, there's just no medicine available, so you're just left with mechanical means of trying to cure this stuff. So it must have been just incredibly frustrating. I can just imagine what a nightmare this was.
Yeah.
Okay. Pretty amazing how with it they were to figure out the genetic component of it. I mean, assuming that they're right, but figuring out that there must be a genetic component and that there was a recessive gene, you know. I mean, this is almost as bad as red hair. Just joking. This is a little joke there, everyone.
Oh, yeah, from someone with a red hair when he grows a beard.
definitely red hair in my family gene pool.
So a Connemara pony, in Irish, it's called Capallin Chonamara. I'm probably saying that very wrong. Anyways, so as a specific breed is indigenous to County Galway in Western Ireland.
Okay.
So the Connemara breed and its associated registry is a relatively recent construct, only dating back to 1923. So archaeological excavations of the area have shown that a similar small hardy pony, the Celt pony, had previously been common to the region for centuries. The origins of the breed have garnered much mystique and have been heavily mythologized, with theories ranging from Scandinavian ponies originally being brought to Ireland by Nordic invaders or the Vikings.
So fjord ponies?
Maybe been fjord ponies, to the introduction of Andalusian or Barb or Iberian blood as a result of wrecked Spanish armadas.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So another likely influence. This is
what the Spanish Armadas were entirely manned by horses.
Yeah. So another likely influence was the now extinct Irish hobby horse.
Oh. Yeah. There was a horse called the hobby horse?
Yes,
was a,
yeah.
Oh, that sounds so cute.
Yeah. So in the middle of the 17th century, it's known that some outside genetic influences to the native pony's existing gene pool were added with the first full conquest by the English colonizers, who brought with them a variety of English-bred horses and ponies, which included thoroughbred, Arabian, Welsh ponies and cobs, and hackneys.
Oop, excuse me. Could you just read hackneys again?
Hackneys. Unfortunately, the potato famine, which was 1845 to 1852, sadly saw the native Connemara pony numbers experience a rapid decline. I can't imagine what happened to them. As a result of the 1891 Congested Districts Board of Ireland, which was a government construct funded by the Church of Ireland to improve the lives of the impoverished people in the western regions, a variety of stallions were brought in to improve the native pony stock.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these crosses, however, resulted in a very disappointing outcome. However, the Welsh pony stallion Prince Llewellyn, who covered mares in the area, produced a son called Dynamite, who would later prove to be very influential in the early Connemara registry. Mm-hmm. And so he is in our Pony Harris's.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Dynamite.
Dynamite.
That's a great name.
Yeah. So in 1901, Professor Ewart, who was a world-renowned zoologist from the University of Edinburgh, whose primary area of study was the evolution of the horse, was brought over to Ireland to do a study of the current plight of the Connemara ponies. He recognized that many of the attempts at introducing new bloodlines had failed to produce a better pony, and noted that there were five fairly distinct types, so that was a quote, in the area. Professor Ewart's study took into account the actual climate and living conditions that the ponies had historically been housed and raised in. He noted that a recent change in housing for the ponies, namely keeping them in stables rather than having them outside, had also contributed to poorer and less hardy stock. So in his study, Ewart recommended a plan that had both a genetic as well as management component to it. He suggested choosing high-quality mares and stallions, emphasizing better bone makeup, but having the resultant offspring be naturally raised and housed outdoors on farms in the area to help to perpetuate and promote their hardiness, stamina, and vigor, while at the same time ensuring the maintenance of their good temperament and versatility. So another part of the mission of the Congested Districts Board of Ireland was to buy up properties from large estates and redistribute the land into smaller, more efficient holdings, which would have helped to make this return to a more natural housing possible for the Connemara pony. The Viscount Dillian estate, the Marquis of Clanclard's estate, Lord Bingham and Baron Ardilaun's estates were all purchased, parceled out, and improved, with drainage, roads, and housing for the local residents put in to further this goal. However, in spite of more small holdings being available to people, the drop in numbers of Connemara ponies continued in the region. This raised even more concerns for the well-being of these hardy and useful native ponies. So efforts were redoubled to preserve and improve them. To give these native ponies more height and speed, in the early 1900s, the thoroughbred sire Thistleton covered many mares in the area. So he's in Harris's pedigree as well.
Well, it's such a limited breeding
it is.
pool that I think almost any Connemara probably has Mr. Thistleton in there.
Yes, I think so. So additionally, some Irish landowners brought in Arabians to add strength and stamina.
Okay.
However, in regard to the ponies, Professor Ewart's study was largely ignored until 1923. At this time, the Congested Districts Board was dissolved by the new government of the Irish Free State and absorbed into the Irish Land Commission. The Connemara Breeder Society was then formed to preserve and improve this native breed, as there were serious concerns about the dilution of the gene pool. The Galway County Committee of Agriculture was next approached, and they provided a grant of £100, which was also matched by a grant from the Department of Agriculture. Part of the funds were used to purchase 93 high-quality mares and 9 foundation stallions. In May of 1924, the council purchased their first 2 stallions for £20 each, Gold Digger, a 13-2-hand-high, 5-year-old dun, and Connemara Dan, a 13-1, 2-year-old black colt. So I don't think I've seen Gold Digger in Harris's pedigree, but Connemara Dancer a
okay.
lot.
Yeah. Okay.
So the other stallions approved for the 1924 season were Cannonball, a 1904, 13-3, 20-year-old gray and son of the half Welsh pony Dynamite.
So when they approve a stud, when they approve it, they're bringing a thoroughbred in, what kind of criteria are they looking for? Is it just random or are they actually looking for...
Oh, no, they're looking at actual criteria. So the height, color, they have to be solid color Connemaras. Okay. You can't have like a Pinto or anything like that.
Okay.
And then, yeah, they wanted particular criteria as far as, you know, hoof quality and straight legs and big eyes, you know, kind of. Harris is actually like the classic. He was like a whatever. They have an A, B, and C ranking, something like that. And he was like an A ranking.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if they're trying to get good feet with a thoroughbred, they must have had a very limited choice.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, BJ had great feet, so you can have thoroughbreds with great feet, too.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then there was Rebel, a 13-2.
Tippy had good feet, too, actually.
Yeah, 13-2, two-year-old gray feet, or gray horse, and then Mount Gabble, a 13-2, seven-year-old bay. So those were the ones that were introduced into the foundation stallions.
Yeah.
Okay, in April of 1924, an inspection group
So when they were originally breeding thoroughbreds into the Connemara stock,
they only introduced one, that Thistleton.
But didn't you say like earlier on?
But that they weren't even thinking about the Connemara as a pony. They were just these wild things that were running around. And so they had thoroughbreds. And so they made it.
So, but they wanted to make them bigger. Was a disappointment in the fact that the Connemara size is such a dominant part of their makeup that they don't seem to get bigger because they have thoroughbred stock in them.
They don't seem to get bigger.
Yeah. Or are they bigger? Are they bigger than were they once the size of Shetland ponies?
No. I think they were between 13 hands and 14 hands. That's your classic Connemara size.
Yeah.
And you have to think about the use of these ponies, which is mainly they would be
cart horses.
Maybe not cart horses, but they'd have like packs on their back and they'd carry like peat and they'd carry stuff.
Oh, okay.
So that's what they were often used for. Yeah. And then maybe a little bit of riding, but not obviously show riding. The focus changed later on. Yeah.
Sure.
So they just wanted something that was manageable. Like trying to wrestle with Harris versus trying to wrestle with Archie, right? I think you want something that's big and strong enough that it can do the job, but
not so big and strong that you can't control it.
That's right.
Whereas Archie just takes you for a ride.
Yeah.
Takes me for a ride. Yeah. I'm a big person.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in April of 1924, an inspection program got underway that offered 125 free nominations of £1 each to broodmares of suitable type selected at centers throughout Galway. So the original selection criteria for inclusion into the Irish Connemara Pony Stud was made on visual type. So these inspections were central to the foundation of the stud book and have continued with the intent for them to be an integral part of the monitoring, stabilization, and safeguarding of the breed. Then, in the 1940s, to further expand the gene pool, three Irish draft stallions, so Skibbereen, Hillside Rover, and Mayboy, were introduced, with Mayboy being the most influential. So Hillside Rover appears in Harris's pedigree once, but Mayboy a couple times. Two or three. Additionally, three thoroughbred stallions, Winter, Buckna, and Little Heaven were added, with Little Heaven being by far the most influential. So Little Heaven's all over. Actually, all of those thoroughbreds are in Harris's pedigree, but Little Heaven predominates. The thoroughbred blood undoubtedly added some size and speed, but more importantly, athleticism, smarts, a great work ethic, and a legendary fifth leg both breeds are known for. While the Irish draft would have also... Fifth leg.
What does that mean?
Oh, that's like when you're jumping or whatever and going up and down, the horse tends to not trip, right?
Okay.
So you're about to flip over because the angle's so sharp and all of a sudden the horse is just galloping off and you're righted again. I've had that sensation a number of times where you're coming down at such a steep angle. You're like, whoa. And then their leg just gets out in front of them and they balance themselves and off they go without like missing a beat.
Huh.
Yeah.
I thought it meant a large male member.
Yeah, I know you would think that. That's why I tried to say it really fast and keep on talking.
But somehow it stood out to me.
as they do. Anyway, off we go. The Irish draft would have contributed a good temperament, size, hardiness, and substance. So the next decade, in 1954, the Arabian stallion Nasil was introduced to the gene pool, adding some elegance and refinement. So he appears in Hereford pedigree twice as well.
Okay.
So since 1964, the Connemara Pony Stud Book has been closed, with no outside breed influences having been introduced since then. So today, all Connemaras to be registered must undergo a visual inspection for approval. Class 1 and Class 2 ponies will be approved for inclusion into the Stud Book, while Class 3 animals will not. So yeah, Harris did the testing and he was Class 1.
Wow.
Yeah. So in the 1970s,
He should be.
The emphasis shifted from breeding a traditional working pony with its associated hardiness to breeding sport ponies. So from a performance perspective, the Connemara pony is considered a versatile, good-tempered, all-round cob type that can be transitioned easily into an extremely athletic, high-performance pony capable of competing against horses at the international level. So Little Heaven's direct offspring include the legendary jumper Stroller and Dundrum. So I don't know if you've ever heard of Stroller before.
No. I don't think so.
We'll talk about Stroller a bit more. So as well as Mrs. VDS Williams' Little Model, with whom she placed 11th individually in dressage, competing for the UK at the 1960 Rome Olympics. Stroller, the only actual pony at 14-1 hands to have ever competed in the Olympics, won an individual silver in show jumping over the very difficult 1968 Mexico Olympics course, all while competing with a broken tooth. And actually, the Mexican Olympics was the highest and widest stadium course they've ever had, or show jumping course they've ever had.
How do you mean widest?
The jumps are the widest.
Oh, so...
Yeah. So, like, the jumps, they can have wide jumps as well as tall jumps.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the jumps were taller and wider than they'd ever had in an Olympic.
Like oxers? Like
Oh,
so more space between them? Or,
yes,
Okay, oh, I see.
And so since then, the courses have gotten smaller because everyone's like, that was like too much. Anyways, and so it was, his pony was second place.
That's amazing.
I know. It's very amazing.
So that's Olympic level jumping. So that's jumping, how high would that be?
Well, over 5'6".
That's crazy.
Yeah. So Stroller is also the only pony to have ever won.
Rory could do that.
Yeah, Rory, who is Harris's grandfather, jumped 5'6".
Yeah, it's amazing to watch someone ride him.
Yeah. So, yeah, Stroller is also the only pony to have ever won the Hamburg Derby, was named Lady Show Jumping World Champion at the 1965 Hickstead Derby, won the 1967 Hickstead Derby, and also won 61 other international level jumping competitions. And these are all competing against horses, obviously. Yeah, yeah. Dundrum, the Nugget, and Little Squire were all Connemara ponies that competed in show jumping internationally and set puissance records, jumping to heights of 7 foot and 7 foot two. So in 1935, at the age of 22, Nugget set the world high jump record at 7 foot two. So halfbreds, last seen and seldom seen, competed internationally in dressage for the U.S. during the 1980s. While Joe Tudor's Sparrowhawk competed in eventing for Team Canada at the 1988 Olympics in Korea. Aaron Gobrah was a purebred Connemara pony, an international level eventer who competed for the USA, and partbred Marcus Aurelius, ridden by Marianne Toski, also won gold for Team USA at the Pan Am Games in eventing in the mid-1970s. So I don't know that there's any other pony breed that has done as well in as many different Olympic disciplines.
It's amazing.
Yeah, or any for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, the important thing is they're like, they're from Ireland, which is like country of jumping horses over things. So.
Yeah, yeah, that is true.
So it's a big part of their makeup, probably.
Yeah. So since the inception of the Connemara Pony Breeding Society, so this is in Ireland, or CPBS, unfortunately, the result of the visual criteria selection process eventually excluded all but five stallion lines, which has resulted in problems with inbreeding and loss of genetic diversity.
Yeah.
So with low numbers worldwide, especially in countries other than Ireland, Connemara pony breeders have had to rely on repeated imports of ponies to widen their own restricted gene pool, which has proven to be costly. In spite of this, as recently as 2005, some members of the United States Connemara Pony Society campaigned to have all ponies with thoroughbred lineage in their pedigrees, for example, Little Heaven descendants, excluded from the stud book retroactively. So fortunately, this proposal did not achieve consensus. So like Harris would not be considered a Connemara anymore if that had gone through.
Yeah.
If he was an American. He's in the Canadian registry, but seems wacky. Yeah, like looking at the number of times that pony is in his pedigree. Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense.
No. Anyway, I think it's just purists, you know, they look, yeah, they're like, what is that breed doing in there? And they wanted to, yeah, just disqualify them.
But I mean, if it was agreed to do this by the, you know, and they met a criteria that was agreed upon, then I don't see the reason for excluding.
No. It was part of the development of the breed.
Yeah.
Okay. So research has recently shown that continued exclusion from the stud book of purebred ponies by visual inspection, low breeding numbers internationally, so typically a mere 4,000 Connemara foals are born annually worldwide, plus a persistent overuse of popular stallions has exacerbated the inbreeding issue by further limiting genetic diversity and variation. So we'll go back to this investigation, these two intrepid detective ladies.
couple of smart cookies.
Yeah. So with the appearance of the weird hoof issue at two farms in two different provinces, Jocelyn Davies and, or Garneau, she goes by two different names, and okay, Penny Huggins, who both volunteered on the board of the Canadian Connemara Pony Society, got together in an attempt to determine the root of their joint problem. As this was in the days before online pedigree sites, the pair started by gathering pedigrees of the ponies that displayed the condition in order to research for a common denominator, what they believed to be a recessive gene disorder. So there are 32 pairs of chromosomes on the equine genome. All recessive gene disorders follow the same pattern. If the pony has just one disordered gene, the problem is not apparent externally. In this case, that each pony has great feet. However, if you breed two ponies together that both carry the disordered recessive gene, in each foal produced, there is a 1 in 4 chance that this offspring will have two abnormal genes, and consequently, external signs of the gene will be apparent. The pony must have received the abnormal gene from each of its parents to be affected. Hmm. In other words, both parents must be carriers, yep, since individuals get one gene from each parent. So the following year, in 2006, Huggins and Davies took a big gamble and did some test breeding. They paired mares that had produced foals with the crumbling feet to a stallion believed to be a non-carrier of the suspected recessive gene. At the same time, mares that were believed to be non-carriers of the gene were then bred to the supposed remaining carrier stallion, the other had since been gelded. Over the next couple of years, their theories were proven correct. The test breedings turned out as predicted, with no further foals born with a weird foot condition.
Well,
with their newfound evidence, Huggins and Davies decided it was time to fan out and gather more information from their contacts in the international Connemara community. They had realized by this time that the condition must be widely spread within the Connemara population, but was likely going either undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. The pair reached out to discuss this issue first with other Canadian breeders, and soon after with those around the world. Initially, there was great reluctance for Connemara breeders to talk about the idea of any possible genetic defect in the breed. However, Huggins and Davies persisted, and with kindness, compassion, and solid evidence behind them, they got their message out, and in a short time, stories from other breeders started to trickle in. With such a small Connemara population worldwide, it turned out that affected ponies were few and far between. Initially, reports of the hoof issue were discounted by some, as it was considered little more than confirmation bias. Some felt that reporting levels were more indicative of internet connectivity than of actual incidence of the condition. However, through their persistence, Huggins and Davies were able to learn through their online forums that the weird hoof foot condition had been seen and recognized as a problem by modern breeders since the 1960s in several European countries. Hmm. Huggins and Davies then looked at the pedigrees of identified ponies, which further confirmed that their bloodline theories were correct. with their evidence in hand, realizing that the condition was not a localized issue, but was in fact something that was present in the Connemara population worldwide, Huggins and Davies determined that Connemara breeders could no longer ignore the issue or explain it away. The two women approached various national Connemara breed societies with their hypothesis regarding a genetic hoof defect in the Connemara pony breed, but were typically met with disinterest or worse. They then formed an online international discussion group of affected breeders that was a direct result of the ongoing lack of interest by the various breed societies. The group the two had formed was completely independent of the various national organizations whose mission should have been the preservation and improvement of the breed. In January of 2011, the Connemara Pony Research Group, or CPRG, which was initially restricted to owners and breeders of affected ponies, was formed online. Initially, the reporting levels were low. However, taking into account the very small pool of Connemaras worldwide, it was soon determined that the presence of any affected individual was notable within the population. As membership of the online forum grew, the group soon developed some specific missions. Firstly, the group's goal was to provide a safe and supportive team to help each other learn more about the condition. Secondly, the management and care of affected ponies was a frequent topic of discussion. Ultimately, this led to discussions on how to avoid producing more of the affected ponies. It was determined that in order to get to the root of the issue, the eventual goal of the online group had to be the initiation of genetic research. Soon the forum consisted of about 25 concerned Connemara owners and breeders from 12 different countries. While the group originated out of Canada, it had quickly grown to include participants from Austria, Sweden, Denmark, New Zealand, and the USA. You'll note Ireland wasn't part of that. Members compiled histories, shared photos of affected ponies, and pored over pedigrees. The group then discovered that there was a privately assembled database called the BreedMate Genetic Analysis Program Suite. This program was then used to develop pedigree maps to reveal any linkages or patterns of inheritance in the pedigrees of the affected ponies in generations 8 through 17. So this is a quote. The names of these 26 seemingly unrelated, as in no common ancestors in a four-generation pedigree, but affected ponies, all resident in Canada and the USA, were entered onto the database. All of the calculations utilized for this mapping included all generations from the first entry of the CPBS stud book in 1924. So many geological programs only calculate to generation 10 maximum. This initial work demonstrated that there appeared to be several lines of descent from a single common ancestor, and that this mapping supported the hypothesis of a genetic cause for the hoof problem, end quote.
Did the original ancestor come from outer space?
Maybe. Oh. So next, the group sought out some experts in the field of hoof care and hoof research.
Let me just interrupt you to say chariot of the cobs. Mm-hmm. Anyway, go on.
So researchers Robert Eustace of the Laminitis Trust in the UK, Professor Hans Guyer of the University of Zurich, and Dr. Kerry Fino at the University of California Davis's Banach Laboratory were brought in, as were several renowned farriers. The project then became the basis of a Bachelor of Vet Technology for another member, making it the first official academic recognition of the issue. This paper researched hoof and lipid metabolism, as well as pedigrees of affected equines. The group turned up solid evidence of earlier identification of the condition. In 1999, the issue had been informally raised at the International Committee of Connemara Pony Societies at Clifton, site of the annual Connemara Pony Show and yearly sale in Ireland. And in the mid-1990s, the UK's Laminitis Trust had also raised concerns about the condition. Unfortunately, there was an apparent lack of interest in pursuing or even acknowledging the issue. The group then discovered evidence of the condition being present back to the 1960s. Ultimately, the group was able to show that the condition predated the formation of the Connemara Registry in the 1920s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, we'll look at the research now. By November of 2011, there was enough interest that sufficient funds had been collected and were available to start a genome-wide association study. Money had been crowdsourced from breeders and owners to finance the research. The primary researcher was Dr. Carrie Fino of the Benash Labs at UC Davis in California. Blood from 36 ponies was collected for the GWAS study, of which 12 equines were affected and 24 were not. By January of 2012, the initial results from phase one of the study were ready. Dr. Carrie Fino's report stated that, quote, based on our results, 12 affected and 24 unaffected cases were enough samples to identify a strong, genome-wide, significant candidate region of association, end quote. 2 years later, in August of 2014, the collaboration between the CPRG and Benash Laboratories of the University of California, Davis, resulted in the development of a genetic test for hoof-wall separation disease, or hoof-wall separation syndrome, it's known as both, that was created by the Veterinary Genetics Lab at UC Davis. This screening test was released worldwide and is now licensed to other laboratories, including Weatherby's of Ireland. The study had established that hoof wall separation syndrome is an autosomal recessive genetic condition situated on chromosome 8 that causes defects in the horn of the hoof wall, which, so far, is only reported in the purebred Connemara pony. Pedigree mapping that had been undertaken during research confirmed that the hoof wall separation syndrome mutation predates the 1924 establishment of the Connemara Pony Breeders Society of Ireland studbook. Pedigree mapping also showed that, and this is a quote, within some discrete population, the Wright's coefficient of inbreeding, or COI, calculated using breed make, frequently reveals individual animals with a COI of over 20%, and this is from a study by Comer in 2007. The median COI for a genetically fit population is considered to be below 5%, end quote. So in any small population, inbreeding is a very real concern. This appeared to be the crux of the matter. So this Dr. Wright that was referred to there, he had developed the Wright's coefficient. His name was Dr. Sewell Wright. He developed the Wright's coefficient of inbreeding, or COI, about 100 years ago. So he was an evolutionary geneticist who recognized, this is a quote, that since we know inbreeding has two consequences that matter to a breeder, one positive, uniformity and prepotency, and one negative, loss of vigor and fertility, it would be useful to be able to calculate the degree of inbreeding of an animal because it would make these effects more predictable, end quote. So as a result, he developed the COI to, quote, predict the degree of zygosity that would result from inbreeding, end quote. So in 1921, Dr. Wright said, quote, if an individual is inbred, his sire and dam are connected in the pedigree by lines of descent from a common ancestor or ancestors. The coefficient of inbreeding is obtained by a summation of coefficients for every line by which the parents are connected, each line tracing back from the sire to a common ancestor and thence forward to the dam, and passing through no individual more than once. The same ancestors may, of course, be involved in more than one line, end quote. An additional genome-wide study, or association study, done in 2015 by Dr. Fino, was done using the first-generation single nucleotide polymorphism DNA genotyping array.
Oh, yeah.
In this study, 15 ponies with the hoof wall separation syndrome and 17 controls were used to identify a genome's significant region of association, with the focus now narrowed specifically to chromosome 8. So they'd already identified it before. Yeah. Yeah. The study looked at the region of association of chromosome 8 in two affected and two unaffected ponies. Each underwent whole genome sequencing, which identified 363 potential associated single nucleotide variants and 20 associated insertions and deletions. So using this information, next they used 23 affected ponies and 27 carriers. So it was determined that only four variants were unique to the 23 affected ponies. The biggest finding was that gene expression of SERPINB11 was significantly downregulated in the cornet band tissues of affected ponies. So this study next included an additional 324 unrelated ponies. Further genotyping then investigated 22 putative or assumed functional variants in 369 Connemara ponies and an additional 169 horses of other breeds. This allowed the carrier frequency to then be calculated at 14.8%. So that's a number that keeps coming up over and over again. Hoofwall separation syndrome, also known as hoofwall separation disease. What exactly is it? So it's an inherited condition or disorder specific to the normally hard-footed Connemara pony, and it's characterized by brittle feet and leads to progressive, uncontrollable, or irreversible fraying, splitting, and breaking of the weight-bearing portions of the dorsal hoof wall, particularly in the distal margin. The breaking and separation observed are confined to the lower areas of the hoof wall outside of the white line. All other structures in the hoof capsule appear normal. So more specifically, hoof wall separation syndrome is a form of ectodermal dysplasia, or ED, which is a heterogeneous group of congenital disorders characterized by alterations in two or more ectodermal structures, or more specifically, hair, nail, teeth, or sweat glands. So to narrow it down even further, hoof wall separation syndrome is a form of ED that only involves the hoof wall structure. So this form of genetic condition is extremely rare and has been classified as a non-syndromic congenital nail disorder, NDNC. So in all equines, the hoof wall is comprised of a horny or cornified material comprised of keratin molecules that are continuously growing from the coronet band. So similar to the way a human fingernail grows out from the cuticle. The growth pattern follows the path of least resistance and terminates at the end of the limb where, in the horse, it meets the ground at the bearing surface. So in looking at the functional anatomy of the hoof capsule, it is an elastomeric structure. That means that it provides the structural support needed to bear the weight of the horse and also provides flexibility needed for movement. So the toe of the forefoot is thicker as well, as the horse carries 60% of his weight on his forelegs.
Yeah.
So in movement, the toe of the forefoot is under high amounts of stress at the moment of breakover or when the foot first leaves the ground. So the keratin molecules in the external layer of the equine foot lack any nerve and blood supply, as David says. All the keratin molecules in the hoof wall are situated in arrays of specialized interlocking tubular and intertubular horn that's arranged in four distinct zones from the external or outermost section of the foot into the innermost aspects of the foot where the tissues are all alive and have nerve and blood supply. So the long chain fibrous keratin molecules found in the external hoof wall provide mechanical strength for structural support, but also offer flexibility since they are fused together with disulfide bonds found between and within the keratin molecules. So this provides a high hoof crack resistance due to the gradient in tubule density that mirrors a gradient in water content across the hoof wall, being the driest on the outside and with the innermost layers having the highest relative water content. The components and configuration of the hoof wall also make it insoluble, so they protect the inner parts of the foot from environmental conditions like external water and long-term moisture damage. So together, these bonded fibrous molecules provide more than enough rigidity and mechanical strength to support the weight of the animal and to protect the inner aspects of the foot from trauma. They also possess the flexibility to absorb ground force shockwave energy. So typically, in healthy horses, when the shock of the impact with the ground reaches the coffin or pedal bone inside the foot, about 90% of the shockwave energy has already been dissipated, primarily in this innermost hoof wall layer, where it interfaces with the sensitive laminae. The sensitive laminae are composed of about 640 interlocking leaves that are the major source of nerve and blood supply in the foot, and they're essentially velcroed to the inner part of the hoof wall and act as a sling to support the coffin bone, where by extension they also help to support the weight of the horse. So unfortunately, in the case of hoof wall separation syndrome, horses with this genetic flaw are missing the lipids that hold the hoof tubules and the hoof wall matrix together. This results in a lack of integrity in the hoof wall structure that ultimately results in the ponies being unable to bear their own weight effectively due to them receiving diminishing and eventually little to no structural support from the hoof capsule as it crumbles over time. At birth, affected animals typically have a sole and white line that initially appears normal and healthy, but within months, the foot starts to crumble, and the pony may then, in severe cases, also develop a proliferative sole or excess horn cell development on the sole itself that's secondary to the crumbling hoof wall. This condition is similar to that seen in canker in horses or hoof rot in sheep. Like developing a large callus, eventually the pony exhibits an increased growth of sole tissue cells due to its attempt to support its own weight on a structure other than its structurally unsound hoof wall. So research has determined that hoof wall separation syndrome has, and this is a quote, complete penetrance with variable expression, end quote, which means that some ponies are affected more seriously than others. In other words, there's a broad range of clinical severity, and the prognosis varies from case to case. Mild cases may just show moderate crumbling and a small degree of separation between the hoof wall and the white line with no lameness, while severe cases can exhibit severe hoof wall breakdown and extreme lameness. In every case of hoof wall separation syndrome, however, all four of the animal's feet are always affected, but each foot may exhibit separation, splitting, and cracking of the hoof wall in various degrees. The disorder is also influenced by, but not caused by, the environment. Ponies living in completely wet or completely dry conditions typically do better than ponies whose feet are subject to environments that fluctuate between wet and dry. So hoof wall separation syndrome is not a death sentence. Some equines are only minimally affected, require little intervention, and go on to have successful competitive careers, only exhibiting the issue in the presence of certain environmental conditions. To date, only one pony has tested positive but exhibited no symptoms. Hoof wall separation syndrome is also characterized by an early age onset, showing up at or before the time the pony reaches 6 months of age. So the classical presentation of hoof wall separation syndrome sees splitting and separation of the dorsal or front of the hoof wall. The splitting results in lesions that are confined to or specific only to the dorsal hoof wall. There's no splitting or separation found in any other ectodermal structures. The hoof wall splitting, that's the primary characteristic of the disorder, does not in and of itself result in lameness. In fact, it's a repeated stress on the innermost parts of the interface between the hoof wall and the sensitive laminae that result in the separation of the interdigitating laminae, or the inner hoof wall, through to the sensitive laminae from the coffin or pedal bone. This action results in a serious and chronic medical condition referred to as laminitis. So laminitis is the number two killer of horses worldwide behind colic. Is a very painful condition and in the average horse may present acutely or chronically. However, in equines with hoof wall separation syndrome, laminitis typically has a progressive onset and becomes a chronic condition. Laminitis can be tracked through x-rays of the coffin or pedal bone, which will, in the case of hoof wall separation syndrome, show a progressive and largely irreversible separation of the dorsal hoof wall from the coffin or cannon bone. Coffin bone or pedal bone. The associated lameness and pain often warrant humane euthanasia. Other secondary and associated conditions that arise in the presence of hoof wall separation syndrome as a result of the compromised feet are both bacterial and fungal infections such as abscesses, thrush, chronic inflammation, and onychomycosis or white line disease. So, the phenotype or physical presentation of the disorder, simply speaking, has a presentation of an animal with a crumbling hoof wall. The genotype or genetic footprint or pattern of the disorder provides more specific information. Researchers studied what is called the area of difference between the genes in affected ponies and non-carriers. This area of difference, called a candidate region, was studied to map the genes for keratin metabolism, which control exactly how hoof, hair, and horn grow. So researchers discovered a strong association with the gene SERPINB11, which has a major yet still poorly understood role in maintaining hoof wall structure. to the root cause of hoof wall separation syndrome. So this makes hoof wall separation syndrome the first disease described to result in a hoof-specific phenotype where no other ectodermal structures other than the hoof wall itself are affected. Further research showed that hoof wall separation syndrome was caused by what's called a frame shift mutation in that same gene. So a frame shift mutation is the insertion or deletion of a nucleotide basis in numbers that are not multiples of three. So once a gene was identified, researchers were able to conclusively determine that hoof wall separation syndrome was inherited as an autosomal recessive trait. So this means that carriers or ponies with just one of these imperfect genes appear completely normal and have the great feet characteristic to the Connemara pony, while an animal with two copies of the gene mutation will show clinical signs of the disease. Researchers also found that some cases were milder than others, while others were very severe, indicating that the mutation is not fully penetrant. Researchers determined that the disorder has a very high penetrance of 96.8%. Continued research has confirmed that hoof wall separation syndrome occurs only in the Connemara breed itself. This means that breeding to produce halfbreds or partbred outcrosses is completely safe, since the gene does not exist in other breeds. The carrier frequency of hoof wall separation syndrome is estimated to be approximately 14.8%. So, however, the number of carriers can change with each generation. The hope is that the disorder can eventually be bred out. Ponies with only one mutant copy of hoof wall separation syndrome appear normal but are carriers. When two normal appearing carriers are bred to each other, there is a 1 in 4 chance that each foal produced that the offspring will receive two abnormal genes or be homozygous and exhibit the phenotype or display the physical effects of the disorder. In order for a pony to show the disease, it must have received one abnormal gene from both of its parents. Ponies that are carriers of hoof wall separation syndrome appear completely normal and can be safely bred outside the breed. So this helps to maintain breed diversity and allows breeders to select for positive attributes. There is no definitive cure for the disorder. By working with the farrier to provide appropriate hoof care, including frequent trimmings and glue-on shoes, in addition to managing environmental conditions, in many cases the severity can be lessened. Okay, so now we'll hear about the pushback. Unfortunately, when Huggins and Davies first approached the International Breed Association with their findings, they discovered that no one wanted to hear what they had to say. This is a quote. "The raising of hoof wall separation disease being present within the breed was met with denial and open hostility by members of the governing council of the CPBS, the Swedish Connemara Pony Breeder Society, and the ICCPS. The chair of the ICCPS at this time was from Sweden. From the onset of the research, multiple requests and invitations were made by the CPRG for the CPBS and the ICCPS to become involved with the research. Every single one of these communications were officially ignored. No response, no reply. The documents are known to have been received and read as delivery, and read receipts had been attached to the documents. On a personal level, several members of the CPRG were subject to abuse and bullying behaviors by CPBS and ICCPS council members. Little action or direction by the previous councils of the CPBS and ICCPS to educate breeders and buyers of Connemara ponies about the hoof wall separation disease issue, especially in Ireland and the UK," end quote. It was stated by those involved in the research and dissemination regarding the presence of hoof wall separation syndrome that, quote, "the actions of people in positions of power and authority in the CPBS and the ICCPS have led to the conversion of the issue to one of political malfeasance," end quote. Finding that they were having no luck with the breed society, the members of the CPRG then decided to go to the media. With the Connemara pony population being highest in Ireland, members felt that would be the best place to start. However, again a quote, "CPRG attempts to engage with Irish Field, a magazine, and the Irish Farmer papers have resulted in no response. Once again, delivery and read receipts have been attached to the documents," end quote. The denial was so endemic, particularly in Ireland, that even after the discovery of the gene mutation was confirmed through testing, here's another quote, "Galway FM and the Connacht Tribune in November 2015 published an article completely rubbishing the existence of hoof wall separation disease. Neither media outlet permitted an airing of an alternate view or refutation to that delivered in their article, which did not acknowledge the available science nor the apparent bias of their source. The source for the aforementioned article would have had to have been supplied to the radio station, as it was not taken from a publicly available publication. The inference is it was a plant for reasons unknown. Such unbalanced reporting is counterproductive to the greater good of the pony, end quote. So, timeline post-discovery of the mutation. However, as evidence from the research continued to roll in, and with the strong support of breeders, especially in North America, who had their own ponies extensively tested, and who then reported the results openly and publicly, it soon became apparent that hoof-wall separation syndrome was an undeniable fact, and something that had to be dealt with within the worldwide Connemara community. So in 2015, Weatherby Scientific, which is the centuries-old firm that controls racing in Ireland, and that also has, since the 1980s, manned labs that undertake genetic and all other forms of equine testing, confirmed to the Irish public that the hoof wall separation syndrome test was relevant to Connemara ponies. Weatherby's used the same test that was created by UC Davis. By late 2015, the CPBS Council in Ireland ruled to make hoof wall separation syndrome testing compulsory for all upcoming 2016 Connemara foals. In 2016, in Ireland, testing of all purebred foals through Weatherby's became compulsory prior to the foal being registered. Test results were then stamped on the pony's passport. Sadly, members of the online Connemara Pony Research Group, CPRG, learned after the fact that many of the foals that tested positive with one gene, but weren't showing any symptoms, were sent directly to the meat market. This gut-level response indicated that breeders still had a high level of fear and ignorance about hoof-wall separation syndrome. Disposing carrier status ponies to the meat trade would result in a further contraction of an already small gene pool, an action that could then result in an even greater genetic problem in Connemaras moving forward. With the test in regular use, CPRG members felt that the next step should be an education program, not specifically about hoof wall separation syndrome, but covering all heritable conditions and their origin. CPRG members wanted it made clear that it was imperative that no pony with a positive test for the hoof wall separation syndrome mutation should be excluded from the breeding pool, and stressed that carrier status does not create any health issue, nor does it constitute an animal welfare issue. Carriers have good feet, no different from that of any other Connemara pony or otherwise unaffected horse. So an education program was conceived to drive home the point that the disease itself only appears when two carrier status ponies are bred. If testing has already revealed hoof wall separation status in a pony, through educated breeding choices, the production of more hoof wall separation status affected ponies could be avoided. Likewise, education would show that since the hoof wall separation syndrome only affects purebred Connemaras, mating with other breeds to produce a halfbred is also a safe choice. So in breeds with a closed stud book, excluding progeny from breeding for any reason is an unwise choice. Over the last 100 years, Connemara ponies have been excluded due to lack of type or for an unpopular color such as blue-eyed creams. Through the artificial selection process, where inspectors' personal preferences determined approval into the stud book, healthy genetic diversity has been lost in the desire for consistency of type. When genetic diversity is stripped by such selection in any given population, then an increase in the level of homozygous recessive or defect genes becomes apparent. Here's a quote. Culling an animal from reproduction removes its entire genome, not only an individual gene. So that was Sponenberg and Bixby from 2007. If a gene pool contracts due to artificial selection, a rising incident in further defect genes will occur. Therefore, any artificial selection against hoof wall separation syndrome will result in a hastened demise in the genetic fitness of the Connemara breed, especially in countries whose breed society fail to educate their membership. Educating breeders that genes do not live in isolation, but are often linked to or have influence on genes on the same chromosome on which the defect gene is found is imperative. Eliminating the defect gene by culling can result in the loss loss of other genes residing along the defect. While the Hufvel separation syndrome mutation may be bred out over time, care must be taken that an unintended consequence be that associated desirable genes are not being lost in the process. In 2016, the same year, Dr. Kate Murray, DVM, was commissioned by the CPBS to prepare a four-page illustrated colored educational Hufvel separation syndrome leaflet. The leaflet was posted on the Connemara Pony Breeders website, so it was readily available for download and distribution. At the International Connemara Pony in the International Connemara Pony community, a shift was made toward increased education about Hufvel separation syndrome. The same year, the Irish Connemara Pony Breeders newsletter published a tribute to Canadian breeders Jocelyn Davies and Penny Huggins for pioneering awareness of Hufvel separation syndrome and its associated study. In 2017, a press release about Hufvel separation syndrome was prepared and sent out to various publications, including Irish Field, the National Weekly Equine Specialist newspaper, and the Veterinary Press. An article about Hufvel separation syndrome runs in Irish Field twice, and advertisements about the testing were run in Irish newspapers. Regional seminars were given by Kate Murphy. A color brochure was reproduced in the newsletter. At the Dublin Horse Show, illustrated material and advice was made available by the CPBS at their booth. In 2018, the testing of all colts brought for inspection was done if they had not already been tested. Owners of untested mares born before 2016 were encouraged to undergo testing at upcoming inspections. The CPBS advertising campaign continued in the press and on the website. At the Dublin Horse Show, illustrated material, including substantial display materials, leaflets, and advice, was made available at the horse show stand. The Hufvel separation disease test results were published in the CPBS database, following the GDPR Data Protection Act of 2018. Private tests were accepted and published on the CPBS database with the owner's consent. In Canada, all ponies were listed electronically on the CLRC, and a North American Stallion list was also added to the website. They also realized some sobering stats. The organization only had 49 members in 2018. And of those owners, only 6 purebred male Connemaras and 1 female Connemara was registered that year. Likewise, 5 half-bred males and 4 half-bred females were registered. 2019, an additional information leaflet was prepared for distribution and sent out to all posts, including membership renewals. An extensive advertising campaign took place. The Irish School of Farrier put Hufvel separation syndrome in their syllabus, and Paul Flynn of Weatherby Scientific addressed the Irish School of Farrier students. The Master Farriers Association discussed Hufvel separation disease at their AGM and distributed literature on the issue. Letters to breeders of any affected pony were sent, highlighting the severity of the disease and providing information on genetics and giving breeding recommendations. Irish Department of Agriculture, Food, and Marine funding was secured under the 2019 Equine Technical Support and Equine Breeding Schemes, offering a discounted rate to test older ponies. In 2020, 2 Hufvel separation disease breeding information workshops were offered by Weatherby's. A subsidized testing scheme was continued and advertising continued. To take place in the Stallion Parade at the Irish Show, every horse had to be tested to participate. However, the parade was cancelled due to COVID, and an online Stallion event happened instead, featuring only tested horses. For inclusion in the Stallion Directory, Hufvel separation status had to be declared. In 2021, the Department of Agriculture approved Hufvel separation disease status stamped in 3 places on the passports, including the cover, the breeding page, and the back page. Dr. Carrie Fino of UC Davis published another paper on the disorder and states now that, this is a quote, "The Connemara Pony Breeder Society requires genetic testing for all new registrations, unless they are the progeny of recorded non-carrier parents. For testing not related to registration, hair samples with roots attached can be submitted to the UC Davis Veterinary Genetics Lab," end quote. Today, one downside to testing across multiple labs is that it is now more difficult to undertake further analysis on the incidence of Hoofwall separation disease mutation and the penetrance level in each discrete population. Some equine cases with the disorder can be maintained with Hoofwall separation syndrome specific hoof care, therapeutic shoeing, and management of the stable environment. Today, the continued practice of visual inspection of Connemaras for inclusion into the stud book by visual means that scientists have predicted a rising incidence in further defect genes in the Connemara pony due to further contraction of the gene pool. Sadly, there are other faulty genes that have already been documented as existing in the Connemara breed. There's a quote, "When genetic diversity is stripped by such selection in any given population, then an increase in the level of homozygous recessive or defect genes becomes apparent. Culling an animal from reproduction removes its entire genome, not only an individual gene." And so that was Bone and Bird and Bixby from 2007. Likewise, it's important for breeders to be educated to the fact that the genes do not live in isolation and they are linked to or influence other genes in the same chromosome. If a defective gene is culled, neighboring genes that influence positive traits will be lost. The consequences of the action of culling genes could have a very negative effect on the overall health, fitness, and hardiness of the breed. Consequently, the continued education of Connemara pony breeders is of utmost importance. Breeders need to be clear that Hoofwall separation syndrome carriers or affected ponies are not excluded from the gene pool, but they do need to be bred thoughtfully and wisely. Scientists have determined that over time, the Hoofwall separation syndrome mutation should be able to be bred out and ultimately disappear. However, in the meantime, care must be taken that any associated genes are not also lost to the gene pool in the process. It is for this basic reason that Hoofwall separation syndrome affected and carrier ponies must not be excluded from the gene pool.
Now, would Harris count as a pony? A pony who has this?
Well, he would have to be tested, but his dad was the one.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then, most likely.
Well, he's got a 1 in 4 chance.
1 in 4 chance. Yeah. Which is pretty strong. And then...
I guess his mom would have had to have had it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Actually, she has... the youngest filly also has it. But then I know that they had different dads, Harris and the filly, and the dad has it.
Okay.
So probably the mom doesn't have it.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's a 1 in 4 chance, so... You could still breed two carrier horses together and get one that doesn't have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're not allowed to do that because of the
risk.
Well,
you shouldn't do it. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Just breed, if they're a carrier, breed to a non-carrier and then you don't have an issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh, interesting. It's a medical mystery, dear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Luckily, the two sleuths are just like a couple of just regular people. I mean, they must have had some.
Yes. I know this through my friend who is on the board. Well, I guess I was also on the board of the Canadian or the Connemara Club, but I never went to any meetings because I hate meetings. But the one lady from Saskatchewan, her son and her daughter-in-law both work at UC Davis and are researchers there. And I think that the lady that did most of the research is perhaps her daughter-in-law. So she had an in that way.
Yes.
And I did talk to her to get more information on this. I was not 100% sure of the timeline based on what I could find online. But when I talked to her, she was actually down in California at that point playing with her grandchildren. And so she said she was too busy at the moment. She referred me to the other lady, Jocelyn, but I didn't bothering her. So, yeah. Anyways. Huh. But yeah, I think, yes, as you say, smart lady. Couple of smart ladies.
Yeah.
And invested as well. You know, you're spending a lot of money and you care about the animals. And I think that's the biggest thing that came clear to me is that certainly they cared about their investment, but they cared about the animals more so. Whereas maybe some of the other people, like they had a hard time kind of making any headway into Ireland for a while.
Yeah.
And I think they were just trying to cover things up over there until eventually you couldn't in the face of, you know.
Also, they went there disguised as two potatoes. It's right away. Yeah. Ireland open the doors for them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's close like the stud book. Let's close the book on the story as well. We have some listener mail.
Mm-hmm.
We got a comment on the website from a listener. And you also got an email?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to start?
Message? Sure.
Or do you want me to start?
I'll start. So this was from Lori. And Lori says, your podcasts have so many great things in them. Thank you again.
Does Lori mention, specifically mention me?
I will read on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she does actually. Oh. So she says, have you watched the documentary movie called True Appaloosa? It's available on Prime. It tries to uncover the true origins of how the Appaloosa breed came to North America. I was listening to the Horse Bits podcast of Operation Cowboy, and it made me think of the documentary. Maybe you could make an episode for you. I had two POA ponies as a kid and loved the Appaloosa breed. At the time, it wasn't cool. All the fancy horses were thoroughbreds. I'm sure you won't be doing much in the way of watching or research for a little while. I guess she's referring to my eye surgery. But I'm sure I'll forget if I wait until later. Thanks to Dave, if he's reading this to you after your surgery, feel better soon.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's very nice.
Yes.
Well, we had a message on our last episode as well from Louise. And Louise wrote to say, so this was episode 3. You'd think when the stakes are so high, people would be more careful about what substances go into their equine athletes' bodies. I was surprised to hear about calming agents used for dressage. I could use a good calming agent myself sometimes. It may not be quite related to doping issues, but another aspect of leveling the playing field I've always wondered about is when they give racehorses extra weight to carry. How do they figure out how much to add to which horses, and does it really work to make the outcome of a race more predictable or more unpredictable?
Oh, you're asking me?
That's what Louise is asking, and since I have no idea what she's talking about.
No, they basically jockeys carry, jockeys weigh a certain amount. And so if you've got a horse that's really good, they'll put the heavier jockey, or that jockey will have to carry weights. So the horse is carrying more weight. And so a person who's an apprentice, they call that having their bug, they generally tend to be lighter. And so if someone wants an advantage, they'll put an apprentice jockey on their horse, so the horse has to carry lighter weight. So I think the belief is that carrying less weight in a race does make a difference.
Well, it seems that that would make to some horses that would make a difference. Maybe a mm-hmm. horse that's unaffected by that.
Yeah. But
to most horses, it would make a difference carrying more weight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When I used to event, once I got to a certain level, we had to carry weights as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I had a weight pad that had little lead things in it. Mm. And because everyone had to have a minimum weight of 160 pounds, and that included your saddle. So you'd come off the cross country course and you'd have to ride up to, I guess it was the ground jury, ask permission to dismount. Then you'd get off, you'd pull your saddle off, you'd go stand on the weight thingy, what do you call that?
A scale.
Scale.
Yeah.
Holding your saddle and your weight cloth, and you had to be 160 pounds or more.
Hmm.
Otherwise, you'd get eliminated.
Oh, wow.
And a guy I know, we were at the Western Canadian Champions one time, he got eliminated because they said he got off without asking for permission.
Oh.
I remember that night, he walked around to everyone's campsites, and he was crying. He was so upset.
Yeah.
And he was a grown man. Like, he was actually a psychologist.
Okay.
But he said, I went up to them. I said, permission to dismount. They said, yes, I got off. They're like, you're eliminated. You didn't ask for permission. So I don't know what that was about.
He didn't say Simon Says.
Yeah, I guess so.
Anyway, they didn't say Simon. Yeah. Anyway. Someone says was not mentioned in this.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if that was just someone playing politics or misunderstanding or whatever, but long story short, it was a big competition, and he got eliminated. So
why would he get eliminated for not?
It was just part of the rules. You have to ask for permission to get off. So I think they just don't want people getting off and going, oh, I was just over here getting off, you know, okay. The usual thing. Like, people will stretch the boundaries. So you had to go, be standing in front of them, right in front of them, ask for permission, get off, and right in front of them, take your saddle off, and then go stand on the scale.
Yeah, because jockeys do that as well. They're weighed with
this. They do, at the track, right where that the winner's box is, or whatever it's called.
Winner's circle?
Yeah, winner's circle, yeah. Been a long time.
Apparently, you forgot your shapes. That's right. There's the loser's triangle and the winner's circle. All right. Well, thank you very much for the show, dear. It was very interesting, actually. For episode 5, not another medical mystery, I assume.
Nope.
So we're looking at, what's the story called?
Maple Leaf Forever.
Maple Leaf Forever.
Mm-hmm. I loved this story at one point, and I actually had it down as story number 1 for one of the seasons, and then I bumped it.
Yeah.
And then I was going to have it for last season. It was going to be story number 1.
Okay.
And then for this season, it was going to be story number 1. And I don't know. I just keep bumping it. But
yeah,
I'm committed for next time.
Well, it's a case of Maple Leaf not forever.
Mm-hmm. The Maple Leaf eventually.
All right, everyone. Well, thank you very much for listening to this week's episode. If you'd like to have your thoughts read out on the show by one of us in our lovely mellifluous voices. If you'd like to hear us read out your thoughts on the show, you can go to the website. The show is hosted on sneakydragon.com, and there you'll find this episode of the show, and you can scroll down, and you'll find a comment section, and you're welcome to leave your thoughts there. We'd love to hear from you, of course. You can also write to us via email at sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. Once again, we'll read out your thoughts. We have a Facebook page called Horse Mysteries. There you will find this episode posted, but also subsequent or what we call it, not subsequent, but we have extra supplementary material that relates to the episode. If you'd like to follow up on any of these parts, you're curious about want to hear more about horses and their unfortunate feet, you may go and find lots of information there. So, lots of ways to contact us or be involved in the Horse Mysteries community. Also, you can leave a comment on our Facebook page, as I said, Horse Mystery. So, that's it for this episode. We'll be back next week with a story called, what's it called again, dear?
Maple Leaf Eventually? No, Forever.
Maple Leaf Forever. And looking forward to it. So, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye, everyone.
Bye.